I'm Gary Knoll. Let's go over and say hello to my guest who is standing by now. He is Professor Omid Safi, and he is here to talk about Mark Levin on Fox the other night, saying how good the Shah of Iran would be if he were still in power, and that we were wrong not to have protected him. And then Michael Savage blathered on for a long time about how ignorant everyone in the Middle East is, and the whole idea is democracy is something that they should not be experiencing. They should be happy with the benevolent despotics and dictators they have. And as Mark Levin said, and at least to his credit, he said it. I wouldn't have thought he would have said it, but his audience is pure raw meat, you know, junkyard bulldogs. They'll eat this up. He said, the only foreign policy that matters is that which benefits the United States. It is irrelevant what's happening anywhere else or how anything we do impacts them. Well, that tells it, doesn't it? Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
I'm very concerned that the American public are being misled on two issues, and I would like for you to address them, please. The first is, I think the White House, by saying that everyone's angry only because of this film, is in complete denial of our creation of the Mujahideen in the 1980s to make Afghanistan and the Russian occupation their Vietnam, and that we train people. We train people with enormous amounts of money and weapons, and these were some of the most rabid fighters, and a lot of them were in partnership with us in Saudi Arabia. We have supported Wahhabism, the Wahhabi ideology, which serves our interest, and Saudi Arabia's, and the Sunnis, who are part of that, but not the majority, but they are the most militant, and yet we have never once condemned Saudi Arabia nor its efforts in sponsoring terrorism and sponsoring terrorists that work on our behalf. And also we're not paying any attention to what we did with the invasion of Iraq, with Afghanistan, with Somalia, with not supporting, not one single one of the Arab Spring Rising Nations did we support. Not one. Only at the very end, when it was clear that Mubarak had lost power, did we suggest he leave. But until that moment, we were giving him military support, intelligence support, as if all the people who were involved in any of these demonstrations and freedom movements were illiterate. So when we kill over 1,000 innocent civilians at wedding parties, at funerals, in shopping, people walking down the street, we kill them, there is no mention of our responsibility, no condemnation. They just happen to be collateral damage. We have 4 people die, which is unfortunate, and that was wrong. That becomes the only issue that's important, that we should seek vengeance. And they could not possibly be angry at us because instead of withdrawing military bases and stopping the drones around the world, Obama has doubled down on it. So nothing that we have done is considered important, just this stupid film. That's one thing I'd like for you to address. On the other side of that are those who believe that because in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood has a substantial amount of power, and that goes against what many of the young and educated Egyptians fought for, that therefore that whole movement was wasted, and we might be much better off with a dictator. And specifically, Mark Levin was praising the Shah of Iran, and I'm thinking surely his audience has some people who understand history and know about his secret police, know about him being a puppet, know about our overthrowing Mossadegh and his democratically elected government. We should know this, but clearly we don't. So would you set us straight on all these points, please?
I'm happy to give it a shot. We should know these, but we don't. partially because we suffer from such an atrocious level of historical amnesia in this country.
The real issue that we have is that many of us have never been taught the actual history, not only of the Middle East and South Asia and global history, but also the real political history of the United States. So in the short amount of time that I have, here are some of the things that I would say. And look, as far as, you know, Mr. Levine and other neocons and warmongers out there, I think what it really comes down to is that it's not only that they're unfortunately ignorant of Iranian history and Egyptian history. I just really question which America it is that they belong to and they wish to belong to. And here's what it comes down to. What do we stand for and what do we wish to stand for? If people tell you that what we stand for is democracy and the promotion of human rights, then so be it, and advocate that around the world at a consistent level. And if whenever a country, a dictator, a president, a prime minister, a ruler, a political party violates that, then stand up to it. I think the majority of people in the world want nothing other from the United States than to show the moral consistency that a global leader should demonstrate. Unfortunately, we have singularly failed in this area. We befriend dictator after dictator because we foolishly believe that it brings us a kind of stable ally. And we threw our weight behind the Shah of Iran. We built up what was at the time the fifth largest military in the world. We overthrew in 1953, through the CIA, their democratically elected prime minister, Mohammad Mossadegh, and court-martialed him simply because he had the audacity to proclaim that Iranian oil belongs to Iranians. And we insisted that, no, it belongs to us at an incredible profit for us. So what we did is that we essentially aborted a democratic popular movement in Iran in exchange for support for a monarchical dictator who was one of the worst and most atrocious violators of human rights. People in the United States may not be familiar with the SAVAK that he established, Sazman-e Etelaat va Amniyat-e Kishvar, but this is a Gestapo-style secret shadowy police force that was trained by the Israeli Mossad and by the CIA. And who did it go after? It went after anybody that championed freedom, human rights, journalists, students, religious leaders, anybody that accused of being a socialist, and what have you. Unfortunately, what people like Mr. Levine and the warmongers at Fox and elsewhere refuse to understand is that when the United States champions the cause of dictators who oppress their own people and oppress human rights, then the inevitable popular backlash is associated not only with those dictators, but in return also against the United States. And so we have had essentially a morally blind foreign policy. And if you take a look at the people that we have supported, not only did we support the Shah, not only did we support Mubarak for 30 years, you know, we supported Saddam Hussein. We supported Saddam Hussein, and Rumsfeld went to shake his bloody hand. Why? Because we foolishly thought that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Well, you know, the enemy of my enemy is not always your friend, and the enemy of your enemy is sometimes a bloodthirsty tyrant who uses chemical weapons on people. When you brought up the example of Saudi Arabia, there's one reason and one reason only that we're friends with the Saudis, and it's one word, and it has three letters, and it starts with an O and ends in an L. It's oil. The Saudis, not all of them, but certainly the Wahhabi clerics there, and the extent to which the government sanctions the Wahhabi propaganda, is the single largest global exporter, not only of oil, but also of radically dangerous and exclusive Islamic interpretations. That in many ways and in many places around the world, from Africa to Bosnia to the United States, They're seeking to replace and displace indigenous and more pluralistic forms of Islam. Why are we supporting it? Because the Saudis have oil. And as long as they have oil, we're not going to say word one against it. So, you know, unfortunately, what this shows is that, you know, the people who are putting profit before principle, oil before genuine American values, and I speak as someone who has a great deal of admiration for what America can stand for, not what we stand for right now, what we have done is that we've put a price on our commitment to human rights and democracy. And this price is resulting now to us being hated increasingly around the world. And as to, you know, the violent demonstrations that are going on around the world, and, you know, I've always been consistent and written about this, I think Muslims around the world, just like all other human beings, have every right to feel that their religious, their cultural, their civic sensibilities have been violated, they have been trampled upon, and they have the right to express that. Naturally, they don't have the right to express it in a way that leads to murder the way that it did in the case of Ambassador Stevens. And I think that that not only violates international human rights and norms, it also violates Islamic principles. And as I've argued elsewhere, it actually violates the very example of the Prophet. But the problem and what we're refusing to acknowledge is we think that these people are upset about a 14-minute crappy-produced YouTube trailer. The truth of the matter is that almost none of the people who are demonstrating have actually seen this trailer. In almost all of these places, people are demonstrating because they're responding to local circumstances. And time and again, it's three causes that they bring up. What are they upset about? Ask them, and they will tell you. They are upset about the drone attacks that you mentioned. They are upset about the United States being the country in the world that feels like it's entitled to put military bases in 200 of the countries. No other country on the planet gets to do this. You know, if Americans want to understand why people are so upset, imagine if you woke up one day and there were 50 Chinese bases planted along the coast of America. You probably wouldn't like it then. You might find yourself being resentful of understanding. And yet this is exactly what the United States does. And then the third and the last one has been the ongoing 40-plus year unilateral, one-sided sham that is our support of Israel. And our support of Israel is standing squarely in the way of a genuine, just, and peaceful resolution to the decades-long Palestinian-Israeli travesty. And the combination of those three factors, the drone wars, our militaristic presence around the world, and our unilateral support of Israel, are what lead people around the world to have these feelings of frustration and resentment towards the United States. What I invite people to think about and to really grapple with is, which America do we want to belong to? Do we want to continue to be an empire? And I'm not afraid to use that term, because that is what we are. We are an empire. The British were proud of being the British Empire, and the sun never sets on the British Empire, and all that jazz. We, as Americans, live in this strange situation of living an empire, breathing like an empire, militarizing like an empire, occupying like an empire, but in our heart of hearts, we want to continue to believe that we're still that shiny city on the hill, the shiny city of democracy and the beacon of freedom. If you want to be that, then be it, but live like it, and treat your fellow neighbors on this planet according to that. I think that's really what I have to say.
I just have one final question. When the President of the United States, when virtually all of the presidents of the United States visit Israel, not once will they go into Gaza and the West Bank to look at the world's largest apartheid outdoor prison holding over 1,500,000 souls. they will not once sit down with them in their camps to see the conditions they have to live under. Instead, they meet with a warmonger, Netanyahu, this time, and I believe that he's going to commit Israel and the United States to a war with Iran. Why do you feel that the presidents have refused to see the true nature of that? The same presidents, up until apartheid ended in South Africa, refused to go into Soweto and Aswota and some of the other apartheid encampments in South Africa to see the true condition that they were living under. Instead, they supported corporate America that was doing business with the South African apartheid regime. Why is it our American media doesn't call people out on it? Why don't the American people call their leaders out on it? Why can't we be honest about anything?
Well, you know, I think it's obviously, it's at the same time a very simple and a very complicated situation. It's very simple because I am confident of the fact that no self-respecting American would ever willingly choose to live in the conditions that are imposed on Palestinians. No self-respecting American would ever accept a condition in which they are told, you cannot drive on Highway 95, but people of another ethnicity can. No self-respecting American would ever accept a situation where they're told, you have to go through 20 offensive checkpoints, but people of another ethnic group can just walk on through with a free pass. The situation that exists in Palestine, Israel, is one that most Americans don't know about. Palestinians are only treated as terrorists, and we fail to see the living daily reality that they are exposed to. I also believe that part of the complication of the factor is the fact that you have a coalescence of a very large demographic portion of the United States population working hand in hand with a very small but politically influential and powerful lobby groups. What I mean by that is, depending on whose numbers you accept, somewhere between a third and a quarter of all Americans self-identify as being evangelical Christians. And there's nothing wrong with that. But a majoritarian tradition of evangelical Christians in the country today have this blind love affair with Israel. The President Bush, Rumsfeld, Condi Rice, Dick Cheney, you can go right down the list of the Bush cabinet, and they actually come from this kind of an evangelical Christian background. Added to that, and compounding that 80 million Americans who have this one-sided support for Israel, which ironically, they don't get this, leads to the oppression and the suppression of indigenous Palestinian Christians. So think about the absurdity of the situation of Christians being complicit in the eradication of Christianity in the land where Jesus was born. And yet this is, in fact, what we're doing every day and what we're supporting every day to the tune of billions of dollars. Compounding that fact, of course, is the political influence that AIPAC has over Washington politics. AIPAC and their fanatical support of a one-sided, warmongering Israeli politics is one of the few issues in Washington that Democrats and Republicans will line up to support. And so whenever there's the annual AIPAC ASCISING conference convention, you'll get more than half of the Congress showing up for it. And this is really what we have to change. This is what we have to remind people. And, you know, I don't have a hope that any one messianic figure is going to come and redeem our political system. We really are talking about having to start at less than zero begin the process of educating the American public. In the person of President Obama, we're talking about somebody that when he was just a local congressman from Illinois, he used to go to conventions on behalf of the right of Palestinians to return to their ancestral homeland. We're talking about a person who used to sit next to the Palestinian Edward Said. And then while in office, you see the full machinery of the AIPAC system and the Christian evangelical system, you know, forcing him to take the absurd positions that he has taken. So we can't really hope and expect any one candidate to change the course. I think what we really have to do, and I say this as somebody who is committed to American ideals and American notions and has a good bit of faith in the goodness, though currently miseducation, of Americans, we have to begin by educating the American public. We have to ask people the question, would you ever willingly choose to live in the situation that Palestinians have to live under?
Professor, we're out of time. You've given us some very insightful answers, and I appreciate that. This audience is certainly receptive to that kind of thinking, and I want to thank you very much for coming on today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Gary.